It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Higgins, joined by my co-host, Fred Zinke. Fred, how are you doing?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. We're back here. We last talked before the trade deadline, and we survived the trade deadline. And now we're looking down the stretch. We're talking earlier about your Blue Jays looking pretty good right now. You got to be pretty excited.
Yeah, definitely. Trade deadline has turned out pretty well for them and feels like they can't lose right now. I'm sure this will all come to an end at some point, but, you know, nice to make up ground and give us a good race to follow.
Yeah, it was a pretty good trade deadline for them, and so far so good ever since. We're recording on Wednesday, August 12th, and the big news from today, of course, is Hisashi Iwakuma throwing a no-hitter for Seattle, the fifth in Mariners history. First in the American League since, like, 2012, but pretty good for him. Kind of a bit surprising. Most no-hitters are surprising, but coming from a guy who was having a bit of a down year.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Iwakuma's a pitcher who has this in him where when he gets hot, he tends to play really well, you know, pitch really well for stretches. And he's a little injury prone, not the safest, you know, guy around. But when you're looking for a pitcher for just the last 2 months of the season, he's certainly someone who could pitch really well down the stretch.
Yeah, and he's a little older than people realize because he came to the league late. But yeah, he's a total control guy, and when he's healthy, not just on the mound, but like fully healthy and things are good, helpful in all formats. You would say you got to take a flyer on him everywhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, in case he's good, and he beat the Orioles, which is not a pushover offense, so that's pretty exciting from him. Got some other big news to, or at least stuff going on right now on the opposite side of the ball in that game. Chris Davis had 6 homers in August already and 3 straight before he got shut down by Iwakuma. And he's reached 30 homers for the third time in the past 4 years. Chris Davis, who was disappointing last year and hadn't really, you know, lit the world on fire in the first half this year, but one of those most dependable power producers in fantasy, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's dependable but streaky. I mean, he's someone, if you're going to draft him and you're going to keep him on your team, you just live with the 2 week stretches where he bats 150 and hits one home run because you're going to get stretches like you're getting right now. And in the end, he's going to have, you know, 35 home runs or 40 home runs. And like you said, he's going to be one of the top power producers in baseball.
Right. I don't know that he's going to hit 300 or whatever he hit in that amazing year. He might be a 240 hitter, but you know, when he's reliably going to hit 35, 40 homers, you take it. So Chris Davis, if you've given up, you know, I'm back in. It's one of those streaks. You got to keep an eye on him. And then, as for the rumor mill, Chase Utley's name coming up lately. Cleared waivers. The Giants are the name. Do you know anything about this, Fred?
Yeah, you know, I've heard the same rumors, you know, you probably have and a lot of people listening have. I don't think Chase Utley is going to be mixed league relevant no matter where he goes to. But he could affect the mixed league relevance of another player. You know, if he ends up on the Giants, it's just when Joe Panik comes back eventually, it's in a bench role. But maybe him, if he does end up on the Giants, maybe it's a sign that the Giants aren't so confident in Joe Panik's back.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of a panic move on their part, I guess you could say. And, you know, maybe makes fantasy owners a little worry because if you're running the Giants and you think Joe Panik's going to be back in a week or two and then he's going to be totally fine, then you don't need Chase Utley as much. So,
yeah,
you know, definitely keep an eye on where he goes, but it might be more of a situation where he affects other players' values more than he helps fantasy owners.
Right. And the most obvious one there is Cesar Hernandez in Philadelphia, who's already kind of fought for that job and getting a lot of starts there. They've been putting him at shortstop some, which I don't think they love. But if Chase Utley leaves Philadelphia, that job is clearly his at second base. And he's become, I wouldn't say quite relevant in standard leagues, but borderline. He's become a player worth keeping an eye on. Do you feel good about Cesar Hernandez?
Yeah, I've always liked his profile. He knows how to draw a walk, and that's a really nice skill for a base stealer. So, you know, he can have a decent batting average, but a pretty good on-base percentage gives him a few more steals over the course of a season. So, and I think, like you said, I think the Phillies are committed to getting him in the lineup every day. They're clearly rebuilding. This is a player who's part of that rebuild. They'll get him in the lineup, whether it's at second base or shortstop, and he'll be batting near the top of the lineup. And like you said, he's fringe in 10-team leagues, but 12-team leagues he should be owned. And 10 teams, if you're chasing steals, he's someone to look at.
Yeah, he's an interesting player, and that's going to be probably the biggest impact if Utley moves, is that Hernandez, who already's getting plenty of starts, has that job all to himself. Another guy we got to talk about, just been on an absolute tear, Carlos Gonzalez in the second half. And even just after May, I cherry-picked some numbers here, which arbitrary endpoints on dates. But through May, through the month of May, 627 OPS in the first 2 months, four homers. You know, he looked kind of washed up. Wonder if he's hurt is always the question. If he's playing, if he's not fully healthy. But since the start of June, 1,060 OPS, 22 homers, 51 RBIs, and 59 games. I mean, what is there to say about Carlos Gonzalez other than clearly on fire, one of the hottest players in baseball right now?
Yeah, and he's always, you know, been a fairly streaky player, but this stretch is, you know, remarkable even for him. And I think the, maybe the lesson we can learn from Carlos Gonzalez, and we can maybe learn the same lesson from someone like Robinson Cano, even Ian Desmond has started to turn around a little bit, is when a player is very, very talented and he has a cold stretch, and I mean, he's not 38 years old or something like that, you know, he has a bad stretch, you know, he can turn it around. And if you bought really low, which you could have on Carlos Gonzalez at the end of May, or if you bought really low on Robinson Cano in June, or, you know, and speaking of older players, if you bought low, say, for example, on David Ortiz, who didn't get off to a great start this season, around the same time, you know, Cargo turned it around. Like, these are really talented players who had rough stretches. You buy low and you hope they turn it around. And I think often you're rewarded. This isn't buying low on just an average player. This is buying low on a really skilled player.
Right. Carlos Gonzalez has first round potential. He hasn't been drafted there in a while, but he has shown the skills to perform like that, you know, and he's doing that now the last couple of months. Not saying he'll necessarily do it down the stretch, but he's healthy. He's clearly healthy. And that's with him has been a lot of the concern. So now, you know, he's capable. He's good to go with that. So keep an eye on him because he's, I mean, the window's pretty well closed up to trade for him, right? You're not about to run out and trade for Carlos Gonzalez.
No. I mean, yeah, like you said, though, the really nice thing to know is that he's healthy. And even looking ahead to 2016, it's rare that Gonzalez has finished a season healthy. And I'm not like in the last few years, and I'm not saying he'll for sure finish this season healthy, but we're getting closer. And it would be like really nice to see him go into an off season healthy and have a really nice, you know, normal schedule. That might really help him in the first half next year.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, it's a player that, you know, depending on how this goes, he might bump up his fantasy value a lot heading into the next year. We're going to talk about some injuries here in a second that are recent. But first, on the other side of that, a guy coming back soon, coming out of Toronto, Marcus Stroman might actually show up here down the stretch.
Yeah. And, you know, I felt all along maybe the Blue Jays were downplaying his return just in the sense of trying to keep expectations low. But since he threw his first, had his first throwing session and it went so well, now the Blue Jays are talking about, Alex Anthopoulos said, this week that there's a chance he'll come back as a starter. And I mean, that's got to pique fantasy owners' interest. When we were looking at him just coming back, you know, in mid-September, it seems quite likely he's going to be back. I mean, they think August 21st, he's going to start a rehab assignment. He can have several appearances before the minor league season ends. But him coming back as a reliever doesn't really make him fantasy relevant. It makes him relevant for the Blue Jays trying to, you know, do well and make the postseason and do well in the postseason. But if he comes back as a starter and throws maybe four starts or something down the stretch, that could be something for mixed league owners. Cause I mean, we're talking about someone who was in early 2015 drafts, like a mid round pick with a ton of upside. And this isn't an arm injury. This is a knee injury. He could be fully ready to go. Maybe not great endurance, but fully ready to go. This is like a talented young pitcher.
Right.
Yeah, this is really interesting news and definitely someone worth stashing.
Right. In your roto leagues, that's not as big of a deal because maybe he might get, what, 20 innings this year? Who knows? Probably not a huge impact. In your head-to-head leagues, though, like, September is the most important part of the year. Like, you have a team that gets you there, but all that matters is who's on your roster in your head-to-head playoffs. That's a guy to really stash that can make a difference if he has some brilliant outings down the stretch in September. And September is such a weird wild card time, not only in playoff races, but in terms of September rosters. There can be some really juicy matchups for teams that have kind of, you know, sending out some minor league guys there. I don't know, head-to-head playoffs deserve their own episode, to be honest. But yeah, in your head-to-head leagues, I would consider, especially if you have the DL spot and Marcus Stroman sitting there, fit him in, because he before thought he was done for the year, and all of a sudden he could make an impact for you guys, you know. So yeah, some more recent injuries. Cole Hamels was scratched from his start on Thursday, 13th. they're not really sure what's going on there yet. They're not sending him to the DL. He could end up there retroactively, but right now it's just one start. Are you worried about Cole Hamels?
I'm not loving this if I'm a Cole Hamels, you know, owner in a 1-year league, because the Rangers are quickly falling out of the race, and with their bullpen, it's hard to see them staying in it. They just acquired him for a huge price, so they're going to be, you know, pretty tentative with him. So right now, no disable list time, but, you know, he's switching over to the American League. That's a little tougher for pitching. He doesn't have good bullpen support. You know, I'm not really loving this. You probably can't trade him for great value right now, since he just got scratched from a start. So you just have to hold on and cross your fingers.
Yeah. Basically, I could see them playing it safe. That's the other thing right about now, is you go to trade for players and you got to wonder, like, are they going to get shut down? Or are these young guys, if you're out of the playoff race, are they going to, you know, not pitch much in September? It's a weird time of year for sure, especially as we hit fantasy trade deadlines. It's a whole nother thing, or often right about now. Tell me about Edwin Encarnacion and his banged up finger, another problem for fantasy owners. He's been kind of day to day. It's been lingering. Do you know much about that?
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks now, and, you know, he missed a game or two and then came back and played for, you know, a week or more. But now he's missed. This will be three games. Tonight we'll make three games in a row. He's hoping to play on Thursday. Part of me wonders if they're just kind of making sure that he's going to be ready for the big series against the Yankees. So I don't think it's really a big deal. And in that lineup, you know, like, he certainly has a lot of potential and is always kind of a streaky hitter if he really gets going right behind Batista. But, yeah, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Even in a weekly transaction, like, I'd anticipate having him next week.
Yeah. Keep an eye on it, but not panicking yet. Maybe the saddest news to come out of the last week, Jose Fernandez hits the DL. Originally, they thought it was shoulder stiffness. They're now saying bicep strain, but everybody was so glad to have him back the last couple months, and now, you know, one of those just, nobody feels good about this. Do you have any insight on what's going on with Jose Fernandez?
No, I will. I'll share a personal story for a minute and mention that I actually traded for Jose Fernandez in Tout Wars at 5:30 on Friday.
Ugh.
And he was scheduled to start Friday night. And maybe a good lesson for me, you know, I thought about, should I not accept the trade offer until after he pitches just to make sure everything's fine? But I mean, everything had been going perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Since he came back from the injury, and I was really looking for a pitcher who could give not just good ratios, but terrific ratios. And he was my target, and, you know, took the trade at 5:30. And I thought, you know, well, the last thing I want to do is pitching against the Braves. I said, I don't want him to go out and throw, you know, 7 no hit innings or something. And then the other owner to say, oh, I think I'm just going to hang on to him. So I took the trade. Sure enough, by about 9:30, I had a knot in my stomach when he left the game early. I think he will come back and pitch this year. I think, like you were saying, you talked about motivation. And I think he will be motivated maybe to get on the mound and have, you know, 2 or 3 starts at the end of the season just to kind of end the season on a good note, rather than the way he's left. Different than maybe than Cole Hamels. I'm not saying Cole Hamels will be up for the season, but he's a veteran and really, you know, put in his time. Fernandez, I think, a young guy, would probably like to end the season on a bit of a high note. So I think you will see him back. I know everyone was saying Marlins are out of it, just shut him down. And I understand that angle. But if the doctors say he's healthy and he's ready to throw again, you know, this doesn't seem like a major injury. Getting him back for a couple starts might be a really good thing for him.
Yeah, and I'm usually pretty tentative about guys that come back from Tommy John. They need a good half season to settle in, and so I wasn't ready to hop right on as soon as he came back, and I was wrong. He looks good. He's all set. He's back to his elite form. He's ready to go. So, that's quite the Tout Wars story. I know rule number one in fantasy sports is nobody wants to hear about your fantasy team, but I think that's a little different when it comes to something like Tout Wars. That's a tough one. So keep an eye on him. There's not a lot of information yet and a lot of different ways this can go. Could be fine, but they're going to be pretty careful with him, obviously, in Miami. Howie Kendrick for the Dodgers went on the DL with a hamstring strain. They're not sure how long that's going to be. Howie Kendrick's a nice player. He's probably not going to make or break your fantasy season by being out. But more relevant there is Jose Peraza comes up. And the thing with Jose Peraza is he is fast. He's really fast, and they started him immediately. First came up, they threw him in at second base. The Dodgers have a lot of infield depth, and they did this whole move, this giant trade to get Matt Latos. But they also picked up Jose Peraza. Somehow they picked up a really good prospect while also doing a big trade for a pitcher. And, he could immediately make an impact. He's a legitimate prospect. I'm not sure he really draws walks, but You got to agree, that speed makes him worth a look in most formats, right?
Yeah, he's definitely worth a look. It'll just, as you mentioned, it'll be a matter of what kind of playing time he's going to get, because they have so much depth around the infield. And if they're going to play him 3 days a week, then he just really can't be owned in mixed leagues. It's just, mm-hmm. he just won't get enough of an opportunity. But if they're going to commit to him every day, then absolutely.
Yeah, he runs like crazy. Keep an eye on him. We haven't really figured out what's going on there, and they have a lot of players that can get involved there. But he's worth keeping an eye on. You noted Steven Matz has started to work on his rehab. Do you think, you know, the Mets are definitely, you know, in that playoff hunt? They're going to be a exciting team to watch down the stretch. Think Steven Matz could get out there, just like Marcus Stroman?
Yeah, absolutely. If I was to pick one of the two, I think I'd rather own Matz. I think he'll probably be back a little sooner, and he's obviously more certain to return as a starter. He's a terrific stash. Like you mentioned, for head-to-head leagues that are going to have playoffs, you know, he could be really valuable. But even in roto leagues, especially for owners who are looking at maybe having some younger pitchers in their rotation right now who might get shut down early, hitting innings limits, things like that, uh-huh. he's someone who can step right in now, you know, probably early September and pick right up where they left off. He looked terrific before he was injured and, you know, has a nice bullpen behind him and, you know, probably a favorable schedule down the stretch. I think he's one of the best stash candidates right now.
Yep. Keep an eye on Steven Matz. His injury wasn't, you know, huge. It's not his arm. He could be making impact for sure. Another mess, Koji Uehara out for the year. His wrist is done. That just was already a shaky Red Sox bullpen. So nothing in your redraft leagues, go ahead and drop Uehara, but where do you go here? The Red Sox seem to still be figuring it out. Tozawa doesn't get that many opportunities, and he finally got one, and it went poorly. They just picked up Gene Mucci. He can't be that inspired by that. They had traded for Ryan Cook. Help me make sense of this Red Sox bullpen, Fred.
Well, I think the most sensible approach is just to avoid it. I mean, if you're in an American League only league and you need saves, sure, you can throw your hat in the ring and grab Tozawa or Mochy and just hope for the best. But in a mixed league, to be honest, I would leave them all on waivers. Even in a deep mixed league, I would. If you're not past your trade deadline and you really need saves and you're looking at the Red Sox, just don't. Don't look at them and go out and make a trade and, you know, give up a starting pitcher and then look for a starter on waivers that you can add, because you'll probably have a better chance of finding a useful starter on waivers than getting, you know, reliable saves production from one of those players.
Yeah, I think my favorite is Tozawa, but I do not feel good about it at all. It's very clear they don't feel good about it either. Yeah, so some other situations have also been messy. I'm kind of surprised some of these bullpen situations falling apart. The Rockies had a good thing going with John Axford for most of the year, and then in the last month, I guess he's running out of gas or something. He hasn't been right. They've taken that job away from him. What's going on in Colorado now?
Yeah, again, another situation to avoid. They don't generate a ton of save chances and mm-hmm. don't really seem, you know, to have someone who can really take hold of that job. So that's not a place I would look either in mixed leagues.
Yeah, that's tough. Tommy Canley, do you know?
Yeah, Canley, he's supposed to be the leader, but I mean, of this closer committee or leader of their bullpen for now, but I mean, with very little experience in the ninth inning and, you know, not a long resume, and then he's got Coors Field, and then not a great starting staff in front of him. You know, how many saves are you really going to get from him for the rest of the season? And then he's going to use up one of your pitching spots. It's one thing if you're maybe in a daily league and you can rotate him in and when you're rotating your starters out, but overall, yeah, this isn't the bullpen to target if you're trying to find cheap saves.
Yeah, he has a good ERA this year, but his whip looks bad, and he doesn't have the reputation. I can see that going badly. How about the Tigers? There are some talented pitchers in that bullpen, but it's also a mess.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've gone with Alex Wilson, who's now dealing with a little bit of shoulder fatigue, which, you know, kind of dampens his star as soon as it started to brighten. But at the same time, you know, Wilson doesn't fit the typical closer profile. His strikeout rate over his career is really low. I believe it's below six. But his ratios the last two seasons are excellent. ERA and WHIP both look really good. You know, they seem interested in going with him at least for the next 2 months. So, now you're talking about somewhere where if you lost Uehara or Axford and you're looking for cheap saves on the waiver wire, Alex Wilson is someone you can target because the results have been there, and hopefully he can turn those results, you know, and just keep them going in the ninth inning. So I think he is someone worth picking up, you know, mindful of the shoulder, and but they seem to think he's available right away again. So yeah, I would definitely take a look at him.
He was kind of a rock in their bullpen for a lot of the year, and he pitches multiple innings a lot, so he doesn't have that closer profile, whatever that means. And I think that might be part of what's going on with his shoulder. They've just used him a lot, and it's kind of stinks for them to take him and put him just in the ninth inning when they used him a lot earlier in games. But he's been the best reliever for him, and that's how you end up with that job there. There are guys like Neftali Feliz and Blaine Hardy and Bruce Rondon, but none of them really are that inspiring. Blaine Hardy's fine, but he's left-handed, and again, he has another use. So it's kind of a messy bullpen, but I agree, Alex Wilson is at least worth a look. So in the last couple of weeks, we've had some exciting debuts from a lot of young, talented pitchers. Haven't seen a lot from a lot of them yet, but some interesting guys either for down the stretch or next year. Let's start with Henry Owens. Fred, what are you thinking about Henry Owens here?
Yeah, to me, he's maybe a little more of a 2016, target. But you could look at him in deep league down the stretch. He had control issues in the minors this season, but he was starting to get those on track during his last few starts before he was called up by the Red Sox. So that's a really good sign. I think if you just look at his walk rate in the minors this year, you would say dismiss him. He's not ready. But the control was getting better, you know, during July. So I think he's someone who could be added in deep leagues, but probably – and now we've already discussed, you know, poor Red Sox bullpen behind him to try to secure some of those wins. If Owens isn't going deep into games and you're counting on him to get a lead and then have that bullpen keep it for three or four innings, I don't think he's a great target.
So he's not that exciting this year down the stretch, but you agree there's definitely a lot of upside. He's an interesting pitching prospect. If I guaranteed you he was getting a starting role in the rotation next year, are you going to draft him late in leagues next year?
Oh yeah, absolutely. He's a perfect target, you know, late, and especially even in shallow leagues, perfect target to draft late. Put him on your bench for his first two or three starts. See how they go. Mm-hmm. If they don't go well, you can always drop him. You know, there are tons of starting pitchers on waivers in those leagues, and if he's going well, then maybe you catch lightning in a bottle as a first full season.
Yep. Okay. How about Luis Severino for the Yankees? Also has two starts under his belt. One, he allowed one run in five innings, and he allowed two runs in six innings next time out. So far, so good for Luis Severino, yeah?
Yeah, he's someone that I'm very, very high on. His numbers in the minors this year are outstanding. Like, not just good, outstanding. Off the top of my head, something like a 2.45 ERA and a 1.00 flat whip, and that's tremendous. And he's looked great in his first two starts. And unlike Owens, you know, he has that support behind him. He's got a really good Yankees lineup, which hasn't been hit well the last few days, but on the season as a whole, that's a good lineup. And then a really nice shutdown pair in the back end of that bullpen. So if he can pitch six innings, you know, consistently giving up two runs, and then they've only got to bridge one inning before they get to that great duo at the back end, and he can pick up some wins down the stretch for you that way. He's someone I think should be owned in all leagues, and I'm really excited about. Keeper league owners, you know, should be really excited with him.
Yep. Okay, and then over in the National League, we talked about how hard it is to pitch in Coors. John Gray, top pitching prospect for the Rockies, they kind of put a lot of pressure on his shoulders. It's going to help their pitching staff. He's made two starts. One wasn't great, one is a little better. It's going to be a tough road for him no matter what. How do you feel about John Gray?
Yeah, I'm going to leave him on waivers in a mixed league, just because you're not going to start a rookie at Coors Field down the stretch this season. And so maybe you could use him for a couple road starts, but we're getting late in the season and, you know, he doesn't have, like we were just talking about the Rockies bullpen. He doesn't have good bullpen support. He's not really going that deep consistently in games. So, I would just leave him on waivers. I would rather own Owens, for example, than Gray. I'd much rather own Severino, but I would rather own Owens than Gray.
Gray's another guy that should probably get a job and should be worth attention in 2016, though, yeah?
I guess so. At the same time, you know, how many times in the last 10 years has a Rockies starting pitcher had mixed league value over a full season? And that's, like,
Duvaldo.
Really rare.
Was about it.
Yeah, it's really rare for that to happen. So, I mean, if you're going in a mixed league draft, say 10, 12 team league next season, and you're expecting John Gray in his first full season to help you in that league when almost every pitcher that Colorado hasn't been able to do that. I don't think it's just worth the risk with him. I think the odds are just too low. I would be inclined next year to leave him and let someone else own him. And mm-hmm. if they get lucky and he turns out great, then, you know, good for them. And I'm going to make him prove it. I'm going to make any Rockies pitcher to me really prove it over an extended stretch before I'm willing to jump on board.
Yeah. Ubaldo Jimenez is the last one that I felt comfortable every time out. Just start him, you know, all 33 times that year and he'll be fine. But it's been a while before that it felt good. And then lastly, San Diego sent out a guy named Colin Ray, and in his debut, went 5 innings, allowed 3 runs, but got the win. He also had his first hit. Congratulations to Colin Ray. Admittedly, not a guy that was on my radar. Fred, how do you feel about Colin Ray?
Yeah, I'd be a little bit interested in him. And for example, in comparison, I would prefer him over Gray for the next few weeks, just because he's in such a more favorable situation. Mm-hmm. I know he's not considered, you know, the elite prospect that Gray has been, but Ray was having a really nice minor league season, and now you've got Petco Park and you've got, you know, that working for him. I know he doesn't have a great lineup to support him, so who knows? I'm glad he got a win, but who knows how many of those he'll be able to come by.
He's got a good bullpen now.
Yeah, absolutely. He does have a good bullpen to finish things off for him. And if the schedule holds, he's up twice next week, and I believe both of those starts are at home. Yeah. So, you know, if you're a mixed league owner and you really need wins, I know people say don't chase wins, but you hit a point in the season where maybe it's in some leagues you do need to chase wins, mm-hmm. Or chasing strikeouts, you know, for that 2-start week. You know, if he could have a couple solid, you know, 6-inning, 3-run starts next week, maybe win a game, get 10 strikeouts across the week, that could be pretty valuable.
Yep. Yeah. That's kind of those, not necessarily chasing the talent, but chasing the matchup and the situation. Like, we probably believe that John Gray is a more talented pitcher, but, that's not exactly what we're measuring in fantasy baseball. We're measuring these stats and these results, and Colin Ray may actually do better for you, in that situation. So yeah, that's interesting for sure. The stark differences between San Diego and Colorado for these young pitchers. All right, so Fred, every week you write a Waiver Wire Targets article, and you have this new one out. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so we break down some players, usually 10 players a week, but usually 5 hitters, 5 pitchers who are available, you know, in roughly about half of mixed leagues, of shallow, like 10-team mixed leagues, and, you know, players who are playing well and we think can keep it up, or players who are playing poorly but we think can turn it around, you know, in the near future, and try to mix it up with some upcoming two-start pitchers, some closers, and let's talk about some of the targets for this week.
All right, so those are up every week at MLB.com/fantasy, which is where all of our content gets put fantasy-wise. Take a look at that from this week, starting out with Ruzne Castillo. Tell me about Ruzne Castillo, Fred.
Yeah, sure. I think fantasy owners should follow the lead of the Red Sox. I mean, he got a chance at, you know, making a mark in the outfield earlier in the season and didn't do well and went back to the minors. And then at that point, most fantasy owners dropped him. But the Red Sox, you know, because they're kind of playing for 2016 now and are clearing out space, they've given him another chance and called him up again in late July. He's been hitting really well since he was called up, you know, hitting over 300, mm-hmm. showing a little bit of power, a little bit of speed. And that's kind of what he's known for, a versatile skill set. So I think he's someone that, you know, that mixed league owners should start looking at, especially if you're looking for that across the board production.
All right. So let's play a little "would you rather" is the phrase we're going to use. We're going to call this, would you rather have Ruzne Castillo or Adam Eaton, just to get a sense?
Yeah, I think I'd take Adam Eaton just because he's hit so well lately.
Yeah. Adam Eaton, I wrote down, again, just picking an arbitrary endpoint, but since June 2nd, hitting .299, his OPS is over .800. He has 7 homers. That's what's been surprising, is he's hitting for power, which is really not what people expected from Adam Eaton's profile. And he has 10 steals, even though fantasy owners expect a little bit more than that. But overall, you know, just like the White Sox offense, picking it up a little bit. But, yeah, you would say Castillo and Eaton right about the same range.
Yeah, a little bit preference of Eaton. But, yeah, I'd say Castillo and him are, yeah, same range.
All right. You like Eaton more. But what about Castillo against Alex Rios?
I think at that point, I'd probably take Castillo and hope that he can hit, you know, over 300 the rest of the way. I think Alex Rios he's okay, but he's on the decline. He can still steal some bases. The power hasn't really been there the last mm-hmm. couple of years. So I'll just go with the young guy and younger guy. I know he's not a young guy, but younger guy and hope that he can keep this up.
Alex Rios has been one of those infamously frustrating fantasy players that looks like, you know, a mixed league stud some years and then just loses it at the plate. And I know he didn't look great last year, and the Royals took a 1-year gamble on him this year, but He doesn't have a home run since July 17th, and he doesn't have a stolen base since July 20th. Like, just really not producing. He's had kind of a up and down, but mostly down year. So I agree. There's at least, you know, some more upside with Castillo. Okay, do you like Castillo, or do you like David Peralta, who's a guy I actually really like?
Yeah, I would probably go with Peralta right now just because he's, like, red hot. So I would use him for right now. The playing time worries me a bit for him when once he cools off because there's a little more of a logjam there. But, yeah, you have to go with Peralta while he's so hot.
Yeah, they like to bat Peralta cleanup right behind Goldschmidt. He's hitting 300. He's heated up lately. He has some homers, some steals. He does struggle a little bit against lefties. His OPS is over 900 against righties on the year right now. And then it's a little under 800. It's not bad against lefties, but like you said, it's a little crowded. He can find himself on the bench, but he's kind of been a pretty good all-around producer. He's not blowing up any of these specific categories, but he's batting in the middle of an order that scores some runs. I don't know. Peralta feels like one of those guys that, you know, can help you. Won't do anything big anywhere, but yeah. While he's doing well, while they like him there, you gotta go with him. And then one more comparison for Ruznick Castillo. Your boy, Kevin Pillar, who was really helpful earlier this season. Are you still buying on Pillar?
No, I'd much rather have Castillo. Pillar's really slumping at the plate. And, you know, still playing great defense. He's going to play every day. Could get some steals down the stretch. And he could turn it around a bit at the plate, but yeah, I would probably look to get rid of him in mixed leagues right now.
Yeah, Pillar, since the start of July, a 604 OPS and 3 stolen bases. That's not helpful. And they just picked up Ben Revere, who can take some time from him. So it was fun while it lasted, and I'll still have my eye on him, but I'm out on Kevin Pillar also. Okay, also from your article, Jason Wirth. What are you thinking about Jason Wirth right now?
Yeah, I mean, he's really struggling this season. I know he's had the injuries, but even since he came back, he's been really struggling. At the same time, you know, Wirth was so good the previous two seasons. So I think he is someone that mixed league owners do need to keep an eye on. He also usually occupies a pretty premium lineup spot, you know, with the Nats. So once he does take off, there's some potential there. I think he's your classic, pick him up in mixed leagues and bench him.
Yep.
And wait and see what happens because he has, I mean, his slash line the last two seasons, you know, prior to this year was roughly, you know, 300, 400, 500, which is like really impressive.
Yeah. When he's on, he's a big help. So right now, going down the stretch this year, would you rather have Jason Wirth or Marlon Byrd?
I think it would come down to what I need as far as if I need Marlon Byrd, if I need one of those players in my lineup today, I'll take Marlon Byrd. If it's for a bench spot, I'll take Wirth.
Yep, a little more upside with Wirth. Marlon Byrd is quietly had a pretty consistent good season. He started awful. He had a 460 OPS in April. Dreadful. He has an 855 OPS since the start of May. And he has 19 homers. Like, if he hits 25 on the air with an OPS over 800, like, you can't ask for a lot more from Marlon Byrd. Boring, but very productive. Okay, not boring. Jason Wirth versus Josh Hamilton. Who you got?
Yeah, I would take Wirth. Hamilton hasn't been especially productive this season, and I don't see that turning around. And they have a bit of a log jam there in the outfield, and the health's always an issue with him. So, yeah, Wirth for sure.
I see a similar type of player, though, who has upside and is playing poorly, and you would want him on your bench just in case he blows up. But I believe in Wirth a little bit more, too. I agree. How about Jason Wirth and Dexter Fowler?
Yeah, I would go Fowler, even though I know he's kind of slumped again here in August. He was good in July, but he's got a nice little power speed combo there. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're looking for steals, I think Fowler could be a good target.
Yep, Fowler has 11 homers and 17 steals on the year. That's if he goes 15-20 or whatever in that Cubs lineup, often at the top of it. Like that's pretty helpful despite his streakiness. And then back to David Peralta, Jason Wirth or David Peralta? What are you thinking?
Yeah, same as when we talked about Castillo. Have to go with Peralta right now, especially because you can use him right away. I wouldn't be surprised if Wirth ended up having, you know, a really nice September and was better than Peralta in that month. But right now, you've got to go with Peralta.
Yeah. Okay, away from the outfield, over to the infield. Jonathan Scope is doing well for the Orioles so far, and for power and for average. Give me a rundown on Jonathan Scope.
Yeah, I mean, well, I remember when I first watched him play a couple years ago, and I thought, you know, this guy looks like a power hitter. You know, he's big, strong guy, and as a middle infielder, like, you know, he really looks like a power hitter, and he is a power hitter. He's shown throughout his career he can hit homers. Last season, though, he just could not get on base.
Yeah.
But this season, he is getting on base. I mean, he doesn't draw a ton of walks, but he can hit for average. He's hitting for average this season. So what's nice about him is, you know, if you're looking to upgrade your in the home run category, he's someone to really look at because you can get home runs from your middle infield spot from him, and there aren't many players who can deliver that.
Yeah.
There are a lot of outfield candidates probably on waivers, you know, like we talked about, Marlon Byrd, David Peralta, that you can look at for cheap power in the outfield, but there isn't a lot of cheap power in the infield, and he's one of them.
Yep, absolutely. And he's also been doing a lot of his damage against righties. He is right-handed, but he's not just picking on lefties. He's hitting both sides of the plate, which is helpful. So, would you rather have Jonathan Schoop or Odubel Herrera in Philadelphia?
Yeah, pretty similar in my eyes, and I think it would just depend on what I needed. Herrera can steal a few bases, and he's also playing really well. So, if I'm looking steals, Herrera, if I'm looking power, Schoop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretty similar, though. I would agree. All right, kind of also a similar player, Jonathan Schoop or Luis Valbuena?
Yeah, I think I go with Schoop because, you know, most of Valbuena's power production came in the first, you know, 2 or 3 months of the season, and it's been that powerful really in the last 6 weeks or so. So and he doesn't do a great job of getting on base either. So I think I just go with the player who's playing well right now.
Yeah. Valbuena has 21 homers on the season, which is undeniably impressive, but a 297 OBP is kind of ugly, and he's moved over to first base. There's a slight log jam. He's still getting plenty of at-bats in Houston. He's a good power play, but I think there's more upside with Schoop for sure. How about Scooter Gennett, last player here in this second base rundown? You like Gennett or you like Jonathan Schoop?
No, I'll take Schoop. I think Gennett just kind of, you know, he is who he is. He's not terrible, but he's not really going to do much to help you win your league. So, especially late in the season, I want to try to get the player who can really help me.
Yeah. Gennett, obviously started the year really terribly. He got sent down. He straightened things out and he came back and he was Scooter Gennett at the plate again, which is good. And he was kind of helpful last year. He has 5 homers and 0 steals on the year. That's not helpful. And even when he's good, he had a 784 OPS in July, which is good. If he puts a 784 OPS up all year, you'd be happy with that from Scooter Gennett. He had no homers and no steals in the month of July to go with that, though. So maybe one of those better in real life than in fantasy type guys. If he's not counting up homers and steals, it's not really helping you that much. So Scooter Gennett has improved, but you got to go with Schoop there. I would agree. And then let's get into the bullpen. Maybe you can look for some help, obviously, not from Detroit or Colorado or, you know, Boston. But Roberto Osuna in Toronto kind of slid in. It was a mess of a bullpen to start the year, but he's done well so far for your Blue Jays.
Yeah, and I mean, when he first took over as the closer, it was kind of quiet. You know, they brought Cecil out of the role, and I think because Osuna's so young, they didn't really want to come right out and say that he was the closer. So fantasy owners didn't really jump on him, and then the Jays didn't generate a lot of save chances through the second half of June and most of July. Mm-hmm. But since they've improved the ball club with getting Price and, you know, and Tulowitzki and everything, and then the better setup crew, Osuna's been getting a lot of save chances in recent games, and he's converting all of them, and he looked great in Yankee Stadium on the weekend. I know he's really young, like he's 20 years old, but this kid really seems to have it. Low ERA, low whip, really calm under pressure. He's not even getting into trouble in most of these save chances and having to work his way out of them. So he's someone who should be owned in all leagues. When you think about if I took out the age and the name and said a closer with, you know, or an ERA around 2 and a whip under 1 and on a team that's winning a lot of games and would be in the postseason if it started today, you would say for sure I want that closer, you know, on my team in every league. And fantasy owners haven't been quick to jump on him, but they should be.
Yeah, I was admittedly skeptical just because he didn't get much experience in the upper minors at all. He just jumped away from the majors and I didn't think he'd handle it, and he has. So he's been good. Do you like him, or if you do want to go to Detroit, Alex Wilson?
Yeah, Osuna for sure. Better strikeout rate, better ball club, better bullpen to set him up.
Yeah, no injury worries right now. How about Osuna or Vizcaino over in Atlanta?
Yeah, Osuna for sure. You know, same kind of thing. Actually, better track record of success. Vizcaino's, you know, had a decent season in a really small sample size, but Osuna's been pitching well all season, and, yeah, and he's on a winning team right now.
Vizcaino's name has been around forever, and he just hasn't got that much major league experience so far. So far, so good this year. 13 and two-thirds innings, one run allowed. The peripherals look good, but just the track record for Osuna. I don't think you're crazy for going and grabbing Vizcaino right now. But I would
Me neither. Yeah, that's not a slight on him at all. More of an endorsement of Osuna.
Yep. And then how about Cody Allen, who has been a reliable closer in the past and recently, but he's allowed a pair of four-run outings in August.
Yeah, and I think that's a great comparison. I would take Osuna for the stretch run, and if you want proof on that, talk to people who have owned Cody Allen this season. He's been really, really frustrating. So Osuna's pitched much better than Allen this year, and we kind of get in our heads that these guys like Cody Allen, who have a little longer track record, are just automatically better fantasy closers, but they're not. And yeah, Osuna's pitched better. His team's winning more. I'd take Osuna over Allen any day.
Okay, and last one, Sean Tolleson in Texas.
Yeah, I take Osuna barely, but to me, it's like a bit of, it's pretty good toss up there. Tolleson's really pitched well, and it is another one who's really underrated by fantasy owners. Maybe just because Texas hasn't generated that much publicity this season, but Tolleson's been a really effective closer.
Yep, he's getting the job done. No reason not to be happy with him there. All right, let's do some quick pitcher ditch, looking at Friday, Saturday, Sunday, upcoming weekend. Try and give me the thumbs up, thumbs down on some of these guys. Not only for this matchup, but for the rest of the year. Mike Montgomery is going to Boston. He started out doing great. The wheels have come off a little bit. He's kind of riding the ship. What are you thinking? Which version of Mike Montgomery are you getting, not only in Boston on Friday, but down the stretch?
Yeah, I'm going to ditch him in Boston. Just, you know, the Red Sox can still score some runs, and he hasn't been so consistent lately. Mm-hmm. I'm not dropping him, but I'm going to ditch him for Friday.
Yep. I'm worried he's kind of a deception guy, and once the league figures him out, because he wasn't a huge top prospect. Nobody expected the success he had, so I have my eyes on him in all leagues still, but I'm very tentative. He has a 60-31 strikeout to walk ratio in 80 innings, 80 and a third, which is okay, but it's not very good. He has a 3.25 ERA, but a 4.17 FIP as a result, so there's some regression coming, quite possibly. Robbie Ray going to Atlanta. You like Robbie Ray?
Yeah, I go for it against Atlanta. They have not hit lefties well. They haven't hit well, period, but they haven't hit lefties well this season. And Ray's been solid, and you get him at Turner Field. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, his ERA's been in the low threes. His whip looks good. He's a guy that was traded for Doug Fister, which seemed silly at the time, and looks like he's living up to the potential that that they saw in him. Not the D-backs didn't trade for him then, but he has in the past been traded for Doug Fister. He has a bit of a history of moving around, but he's come up and he's been good this year. So I like Robbie Ray. I'm in on that too. How about Nate Karns going to Texas?
Yeah, overall I like Nate Karns, but I'd sit him for this one. Texas has a lot of left-handed bats and does pretty well against right-handed pitchers. So I'd sit him for that start.
I love Nate Karns. He pitches well when he's on the mound, but the Rays have been putting short leashes on a lot of these guys. It's hard to go past five or six innings for him, which is maybe smart management, but doesn't help us fantasy owners that much. So it kind of limits him. And then Jared Weaver's going to Kansas City. Is there any upside for Jared Weaver for you anymore?
Not really. I would definitely sit him against the Royals. You know, they're a tough, scrappy offense, so, and they're hard to get a lot of strikeouts against them. So, yeah, definite sit there. He's a pitcher I'm going to really make prove it before I would put him back in a lineup.
He's kind of in the Verlander category for me, or maybe worse. I'm out on Weaver until I'm convinced otherwise. It's sad, but no thanks. Saturday the 15th, Chris Bassett's going to Baltimore. Chris Bassett's been awesome. 2.48 ERA, 1.05 whip. What do you see from Chris Bassett?
Yeah, he's pitched great. I liked Bassett when he was coming up, when they just added him to the rotation. His minor league numbers are good. His major league numbers are good. He's another one of those pitchers who doesn't have, you know, the elite, you know, respect from scouts and, prospect status, I guess, when he was younger, but he's pitched really well all the way through. So I might not pitch him in shallow leagues when he's in Baltimore this weekend. I pitch him maybe in a 15 team league, but not in a 10 or 12, but long term, I'm, you know, pretty excited about him for the stretch.
Got to pick him up everywhere, right?
For sure.
Yeah, five straight quality starts before this one. I agree. I'm tentative about going to Baltimore, but I like him in general. How about Patrick Corbin going to Atlanta?
Yeah, I'd start. Same thing as Robbie Ray. Corbin's been solid. Not awesome, but solid since he came back from Tommy John. And, you know, good matchup for him there against the Braves.
Yep. He has a 4.08 ERA, which is not that inspiring, but he has 35 strikeouts to 8 walks and 35 and a third innings. That's great. He's allowed 6 homers has been his problem, which means his FIP is actually, pardon me, his xFIP is 325. I could see him actually improving. I like Corbin. I think you got to grab him in every league. All right, and then we talked about John Gray and Colin Ray and the tough places for these young guys to pitch. So John Gray gets the Padres, but he gets them in Colorado. Do you like that at all?
No, you can't use him in Coors. I know the Padres don't have a good offense, but yeah, you can't use him.
Yeah, that's scary. Keep an eye on it. I want to see how he does. I'll check out the box score, but I wouldn't, you know, put my eggs in that basket right now. And then Sunday the 16th, your boy Luis Severino comes to Toronto. What do you think? I know you like him, but that's about the scariest place to pitch, yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to put my foot down though with Severino, and I'm going to say pitch him. I mean, if you believe in a pitcher, you believe in a pitcher. And even though Toronto's a tough place to pitch, a good pitcher can have success there. And he's currently scheduled to match up against Drew Hutchison, who pitched well on Tuesday, but hasn't pitched well overall this season. So if Severino can go 6 innings, 3 runs against the Blue Jays, which might not be easy to do, but if he can do that, he could come away with a win in that game.
Yeah. What do you think about Hutchison? Has been one of the most perplexing pitchers this year.
Yeah, I think in general, I'm going to say I'm out on him. I sat him in some leagues this week, even though he had 2 starts, and I guess in a way got burned last night on Tuesday night, I should say, when he pitched so well. But I think it's just not worth the risk, because at any moment you could get that like 4-inning, 7-run start. And I mean, in an AL only league, you can use him, but I don't think in a mixed league, I'm going to go back in that direction. And he could lose his rotation spot in a few weeks if Stroman gets back.
Yeah, he's had such weird splits. He's been bad against fellow righties, but been able to get out lefties when he doesn't have a platoon advantage. He's been good at home. He's been bad on the road. The most important part, he has a 5.25 ERA in his past start, 12 starts. He's been allowing runs in general is all you need to take away from it. How about Henry Owens going to Seattle?
Yeah, I'll take Henry Owens against Seattle. And I give him a shot in a deeper league in that. I think in a 10-team league, I'm out. In a 12-team league, I'm probably out. In a deeper league, I would go for it.
Yeah, he's interesting. That's a good matchup. He's a guy we have our eye on, at least. And then how about Taylor Youngman against Philadelphia? He's been pretty good so far this year, kind of under the radar from Milwaukee. 2.42 ERA, 1.14 whip. He gets Philadelphia. It's a good matchup. Do you like Taylor Youngman, and do you like him in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I'll use him against the Phillies on the weekend, just because the Phillies typically don't hit right-handers very well. They're, you know, fairly notable splits are better against left-handers. But in general, I gotta say I'm a little worried about him after his performance against the Cubs on Tuesday. And,
yep. You
know, you wonder if hitters are starting to catch up to him a little bit. It wasn't like 6 innings, 4 runs. Like that was, didn't get through the 3rd inning. So I'm a little worried about him. I would probably use him for this start because it's the Phillies. And then if he doesn't look really good in this start, then I'm going to back way off.
Yeah. He didn't have dominant numbers in the minor leagues. It's kind of a perplexing pitcher, but other than in Chicago, so far, so good. And then, all right, we don't have time for Twitter questions this week. You and I end up talking a lot, not quite getting to it. But let's take a quick peek to the week ahead also for some of these two-start pitchers as well. Any of these two-start pitchers jump off the page to you guys that you might look at kind of fringy but could help you out in the next week?
Yeah, for sure. I can give a few for mixed league owners. One is Kevin Gausman, and he's been, you know, kind of up and down all season, but a talented young pitcher. What I like about him is next week he's scheduled to face the Mets and the Twins. Those are two offenses that don't do well against right-handers. So, yep. I mean, like, if you're ever going to use them, this is a pretty good time. Another one owners could look at, we all kind of gave up on Matt Garza through the first half of the season.
I did.
Yeah, for sure. And I understand that. But, you know, from 2007 to 2014, he was a usable mixed league pitcher with an ERA around 3.7 and, you know, Yeah, for sure. And in the second half, he's been much better. Next week, he's going to face the Marlins, who are the worst team in baseball against right-handed pitchers. So that's good for him. And then he's going to go to Washington. And Washington's a good club, but they haven't been hitting very well lately. And we talked about Worth, and he's not the only one struggling, Rendon. And, you know, they're not hitting well. So those are two of my favorites for next week that I would look at in mixed leagues, probably on waivers in a lot of mixed formats.
Yep. And then I have a couple of Boston guys written down right here. Let me know if you like either of them. Steven Wright and Eduardo Rodriguez both get 2 starts next week. They're scheduled to get Cleveland and Kansas City, both at home in Boston. Are you intrigued by either of them?
I'd say in most mixed leagues, I'm going to pass. In a 15-team league, I'd probably take a good look at them, depending on what my options are. Neither of them, neither of those two pitchers pitched especially well against the Marlins this week, which kind of is concerning because that's not a very good lineup. Mm-hmm. Kansas City's a tough lineup. The Indians aren't a great lineup, but they're not terrible. So yeah, I'm not as excited about them as I would be of Garza and Gausman.
Yep. And then finally, Colin Ray that we discussed. He'll be at home against Atlanta and St. Louis. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I would probably consider him over the Red Sox pair that we just mentioned, just because his circumstances are a little more forgiving. Well, 15-team league, I definitely take a look.
Yep, and he has a bullpen behind him, and you can't say that about a lot of those Boston pitchers. And then let's take a look at some hitters next week. Usually we're used to looking at two-start pitchers, but sometimes it's nice to forecast for the hitters and what they got coming up in the upcoming week. Fred, tell us about your strategy for this and how this can be helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I think owners in weekly transaction leagues look a lot at pitchers and what their matchups are, but maybe don't look enough at hitters and what kind of matchups they have coming up and who they can get off waivers. I'll give you an example. For example, the Rockies are home all next week. They're going to face the Mets and the Nats, who both have good pitching staffs, but there are a lot of Rockies players that play really well in Colorado. And I'll give you an example is Nick Hundley. Nick Hundley is raking at Coors Field in his first season with the Rockies and not hitting well at all on the road. If you're someone who doesn't have, you know, a lot of catcher production, why not pick him up and give him a shot at home for a week and then just drop him, you know, when the homestand ends?
Yep. He gets 3 games from the Nationals and 3 games from the Mets, but it's Coors Field, and that's pretty important. Like you said, the whole team has big splits, but including him, that could be really helpful. Any other teams that stick out to you?
Yeah, for sure. Well, we just mentioned, you know, the Washington's in Coors Field. That's usually a recipe for scoring runs. So, you know, if you want to take a shot at Worth and seeing if he could break out, you know, maybe this is the week to pick him up and give him a chance. After they're done in Coors, they're going to come back home and they're going to play a Brewers team that doesn't have a lot of high-end starting pitching. So if they could get on a bit of a roll in Colorado, maybe they keep it going. And another team to look at is the Royals. The Royals are going to go to Cincinnati. Nice park for home runs, a pitching staff that's really rebuilding and using a lot of minor league types trying to get ready for next season. And then they're going to go to Boston, and we've already talked about the problems with Boston's pitching staff. So, yeah. I mean, some of those guys like Escobar or Moustakas, who are kind of fringy, like utility type guys, or middle infield for Escobar in those shallow leagues, this is the week to get them in your lineup.
Yep. Could be doing big things at the plate here for sure, coming up for next week, especially you guys. And this is mostly for people who do weekly lineups. You know, you got to lock them by Sunday night or whenever, that it could be good to get those guys in for all those games. Like I said, we ran out of time for Twitter questions, but we still love to get them at the 411 account. At Fantasy411 is the address on Twitter. Fred, you run Twitter chats every week, yeah?
Yeah, every Tuesday, 3 p.m., you know, we'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. I'll give you a tip. If you've made it to this point in the podcast, the best thing you can do is get your question in right close to 3 p.m. or even earlier in the day, and I always hit those questions up first. I think those people are really on the ball. If you get your question in Tuesday morning, you know, in anticipation of that chat session, you're going to get your question answered.
Yep. So that's at Fantasy411. Love to hear from you guys. Get your fantasy questions. We run those chats. And then check out the website, MLB.com/fantasy. Fred's writing there every week. Got a lot of stuff going on. We got our closer report to try and keep an eye on these messy situations. We keep those updated. So you can always check who the closer is, who's next in line, and then who the sleeper might be. We got the MLB.com injury report, which not only keeps track of everybody who's injured, but also some timelines and some updates of when they're coming back. We got a lot of tools over there at the fantasy website at MLB.com. So check it out. A lot of stuff going on there can help you down the stretch. Now's the important time of the season, it feels like. I feel like the draft is number one most important time. And then down the stretch, especially when a lot of teams are not paying attention, you can win your league in August and September, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of people start thinking, you know, football this time of year, but those who stay focused on baseball can really reap the rewards.
Yeah, make a big difference. Fred, you got anything else before we get out of here?
No, I just want to say, you know, in closing, you know, big thanks to Corey and Mike for giving us this extended opportunity here down the stretch. And, you know, a real thrill. This is a podcast that I've been listening to religiously, you know, for many, many years. And get a chance to be a part of it is a real honor for me.
Yeah, we appreciate it a lot. Thanks to Corey and Mike. I'm sure we'll have them around some too, and love to let us get involved. And so hopefully you guys like listen to us, and hopefully we're helping you with your leagues down the stretch. So that should do it for us. Remember, at Fantasy411 and MLB.com/fantasy. Hope to see you guys over there, and good luck with your leagues.